I keep thinking about it in the back of my head. What is it going to take for me to get there again this year? But I don't know. It's one of those things that's super important to me and very low down on the priority list of everyone else. So it's one of those things. Well, you went last year. Do you need to go every year? We'll see.
Only until I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
When is it? All right.
July or?
July 23 to 29. God, I'm going to miss the night air show again. My kid's birthday is the 28th.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's – so last year was you did you guys fly back in order to be home for his birthday?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That and he was completely exhausted. I wasn't too far behind. I don't know. Do you guys like nap during the day? What do you guys do?
Man, let's see. I got there – okay, I got there Wednesday night at midnight. That's when John came and picked me up.
Right.
And from Wednesday night at midnight to Sunday when I flew home, I'm not sure I had more than 15 hours of sleep in those days. Maybe it was probably more like 12.
Yeah, see, that just does not work for me.
And we were up outside hanging around talking and drinking for – every night till like 2 or 3 in the morning, it seemed like. I don't know what we had to talk about that was so important, but we sure did capitalize on every moment we had there, especially since I wasn't there near as long as like John was there, you know.
And you're going to try to drag your family to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite a logistics problem too, because the only way I want to do it again is if we camp. So I sure as heck ain't driving to Oshkosh.
from Arizona.
Right. You know what I mean?
You got your ticket.
You know? Yeah. And so if I want to spend $3,000, I could fly there.
wouldn't cost you that much.
I don't know.
Hold on.
To rent the plane for several days.
The hours that you'll put on it, you'll cover the overnight cost. So, I mean, you'll have enough hours on it that you won't be paying any surcharge for having it for days.
Yeah, it's 3 hours a day if you're going to keep it 24 hours. If you're going to keep it the whole day, you have to have three. So
someplace else. So you got 1,261 miles. So that's 11 hours each way. So you'll have plenty.
Yeah.
You'll have plenty of hours.
22 hours at $75 an hour. That's actually $79 an hour, including tax. And then $1.6 trillion in fuel.
Oh, that's dry?
Yeah, that's dry.
79 plus what, 550? So 130, you're looking at $130 an hour.
Yeah, I've been about 125 an hour, I think, roughly. But
yeah, okay, you're right, $3,000. Okay, so go buy a plane.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
Well, John, if you got to depart soon, should we get going?
Yeah.
Welcome to the In the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
All right, welcome to the FR. Exchange proof for my gum. Line up and wait 7 range.
Mark Tower 172, Romeo Hotel, holding short on 133, ready to take off.
Robert Delta, about 392, I'm Mike, and I'm with downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
All right, welcome to episode 20 of the In the Pattern Podcast. We are tonight missing one. We've got John and, of course, me, Chris, and Brad. And unfortunately, Mark's not available to be with us tonight, but he asked us to carry on. So we are. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Doing good. Trying to stay warm.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, we got some sleet, rain, snow. I don't know what the hell's coming tonight, but it's going to be a bunch of everything. It's already windy and really cold, so.
We actually had that same system pass through this morning. That's coming to you.
Yeah.
And it's now a balmy 3 Fahrenheit.
I think we're still in the 30s, but maybe.
The wind just makes everything worse, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a 31 as of 3 minutes ago. So.
Wow. Yeah, we were talking before we got before you jumped on, before we started recording, and it's just been so nice here. I just it's hard not to look up every day and just go, man, I'd rather be up there, because it's just been like nearly, you know, the low 70s every day for weeks now. It's just so weird. I mean, you think of Phoenix of being warm all the time, and it generally is, but at least in the winter, and especially January, every night, you know, we're running out and putting, you know, some sheets or something over our plants and flowers or whatnot, because they grow all year, but they will tend to get a little frostburn, but not this year. And I just wonder what that means. I mean, we're going to try and break some records of like 123 during the summer, because I'll pass if that's my option.
No, that means you're going to get a blizzard in a couple weeks.
A blizzard. That would be great.
I mean, we hit like 60s a couple weeks ago, and it was like, it's January and it's 60 out. What the hell?
Yeah, it was 60 degrees here on Monday. Yesterday morning, it was minus 13.
So strange.
Very strange.
So it's been some of the best flying weather out here I can ever remember.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. We talk about flying here.
The flying stuff, yes. Very nice.
What's that? I don't know what that is.
Very nice.
Let me explain this to me.
Let me shoot you over an email here. Wikipedia. Let's see.
Aviation.
I wouldn't know.
How's the new job going, John?
It's going well. I am working like crazy, but it's good.
Good, good.
Yeah, so I've been very, very busy between work, and then I come home from work and read tech books, and it's, yeah, that's been my life the past couple weeks.
And it's like slamming on that episode 19.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, slamming on it.
Oh.
Yeah. I promise episode 19 is coming out soon.
In quotes.
That was 19 days ago.
Hey, I released two in December, and then the holidays happened.
That was impressive. That was impressive.
By the way, this is for those of you who are listening. We're recording this on Friday, January 20th, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I promise it'll be out by January 21st, 2013.
No later than, huh?
No later than.
Well,
it's been crazy.
Yeah. So, anywho, who wants to start off? Brad, why don't you get us up to date with some stuff that's been going on in your area?
Sure. Well, last time we talked a little bit about my run-in with carbon monoxide.
Mm, yeah.
And it was interesting. That kind of came up at our club monthly meeting, and had some chats about it. And there was a lot of concern that that could have been a real catastrophic situation, and a lot of discussion about, you know, should we be getting digital CO detectors for the aircraft, because they don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of pushback, because statistically carbon monoxide accidents are pretty rare in general aviation. There's usually, you know, 5 or 6 a year across the entire North American fleet, which, you know, comparatively not that big of a thing when you consider that we don't have things in the aircraft like fire extinguishers at this point. So it was kind of interesting to get the perception of other people that are in the flying club who've been flying for a lot longer than I have, and see what they think of as kind of critical safety gear versus non-critical safety gear. Me, I'm going to continue to fly with my CO detector on me anytime when I think I'm going to be using the heat in the aircraft. I'll have it turned on and stuck on me.
Yeah, might as well. I mean, yeah, it's something we don't hear a lot about, is those accidents caused by that. But yeah, I'd be surprised too, because I imagine, especially in your guys' neck of the woods where rust is more of an issue, you might have those issues with your exhausts out there.
Well, the exhaust is it aluminum or is it stainless? I can't remember. It's probably stainless.
Probably stainless.
Yeah. So it's not going to have the rust issues, but they do. What actually happened in this case was there was something basically around a rivet that goes through the exhaust muff. It had just kind of worn. It had shaken enough that a hole developed around the rivet.
Oh, it kind of got rounded out a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of got rounded out, and that hole got big enough that exhaust was pumping in into the side that carries fresh air through the muff to the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the source of the thing. And of course, you just throw the whole thing out and replace it. But it wasn't a rust thing. It was just mechanical wear on the part had caused it to happen. So yeah, who knows? It was kind of a mystery thing. I was very lucky that it happened to somebody in the club that had a CO detector, and it happened when I was on the ground.
Yeah, yeah, a lot better there.
Right, because if it had gone off in the air, I certainly would have headed for the first available airport, and I would have gotten on and declared.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that to me qualifies as an emergency situation. You know, you shut off the heat, you open the window, you declare, and you get on the ground, and have the trucks there and the whole thing, because you can't tell if you're going to make it. You're compromised at that point. But fortunately, it happened on the ground, and it was never really an issue.
So so you say they already did the fix? They already did the replacement?
Yeah, they took it out and put in a new one, and it's a very quick repair.
So it didn't have a lot of downtime. That's good.
Right. And the plane was back up and running, and it hasn't seen any more issues from that particular thing. It's funny because I flew that same airplane, or I was going to fly that same aircraft again this past weekend.
Was that the Archer?
No, this is the Warrior.
Oh, okay.
So it's a 161. Mm-hmm. 160 horse Warrior, and I was going to get some instruction time in it, and my CFII and I go out and we grab the plane and pre-flight, and we're just going to go out and shoot a bunch of approaches for an hour, and we get this was on Monday, and we get out to do the run-up, same exact aircraft. I've got my CO detector on, of course, and I get the brake is set, and I rattle it up to 2,000 RPM, and the engine is just unbelievably rough. And I'm going, probably a foul plug or something, but I still am on both mags, so that's a little unusual. But we assume it's foul plug, and we start going through the, go unfoul the plug procedure.
Lean it out a little bit.
Yeah, go full power and lean it out.
Mm-hmm.
We go full power, and my instructor's got a couple thousand hours in Cherokees, and he notices that we can't get above 2100 RPM at full power. And so he starts messing with things to unfoul the plugs. And we notice that the engine roughness doesn't change at all as we switch the mags. So we go from both to left to right. The roughness doesn't change. So if it was a fouled plug, it should get considerably worse when you're running on the mag that is
bad.
Is on the bad side, and it didn't, and we couldn't get it above we leaned it and brought it back up to full rich, and we couldn't get that engine to turn more than 2100 RPM. And he looked at it and said, there's no way we're flying this thing today. So went back to the club, and I squawked it on the squawk sheet and put a there's a clipboard where for every aircraft that we have in the club, and it's in one of two positions. If it's in the high position, it means the plane's flyable, but it may have some squawks against it. If it's in the low position, it means do not fly. And I put it in the do not fly position. I sent out an email in case anybody had the plane scheduled for use that day or the next day. And they, the Club ANP took a look at it, and he said, no, it's fine. I don't know. Maybe that plane just has it in for me. I'm not really sure.
Jeez. So I don't know what it is in that plane, but in the Archer, I think my max RPM is about 2,500 RPM. 2,100 just keeps me aloft. 21's just like at 2,000 RPM, I will start sinking. But at 21, I can stay level. It's kind of my economy cruise, if you will.
Yeah, and on the ground, you know, when you're sitting there and you've got a fixed pitch prop, I would expect that you're not going to be able to get to 2,500. You should be able to get to 2,300, though.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, what you were describing kind of reminds me of what happened to me up in Flagstaff, but that was an altitude issue with me. And by leaning it out, then I got my horsepower back a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm at low altitude. It's cold, so I've got extra dense air going into it. Mm-hmm. We're certainly at a negative density altitude. And so didn't feel it was safe, but the ANP checked it off and said it was fine. And one nice thing about that, though, is kind of as with renting, when there's an issue with the engine or when there's an issue with the exhaust muff or whatever it is, or the avionics, being in a flying club, you're distributing that cost over all of the members of the club.
Right.
You know, it was occurring to me on the way back that I'm thinking, you know, if this was my aircraft, I'd be paying that ANP to come out and look at it and try to figure it out. And we had noted an engine, the EGT monitor was showing us a low exhaust temperature on one of the cylinders, and he'd be tearing this thing apart trying to figure that all out. And I'd be sitting there going, how long is it going to be before I can fly again after I pay this guy off for trying to fix this? But in the flying club, you know, it's just that cost is distributed across all of the members of the club, and so I'm not really eating all of that expense.
That's why single plane ownership has no appeal to me whatsoever, and I don't know how people do it. I don't know where they get their money from, because it's one of those things that you cannot let anything, even really small things, go by and say, well, I'll catch it later, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It'll catch you later before you catch it later, probably. You know what I mean? So, yeah. The only way I see doing it is the club deal, or in a perfect world, I just want, you know, three other friends, like-minded individuals that, you know, want to own a plane together, and we don't have any per se monthly dues plus, you know, a cheap rental fee. I just want, you know, a payment for the hangar, a payment for the airplane, a payment for the insurance, et cetera, you know. And then when something comes due, we all chip in, you know, or bump up, you know, put a little buffer into that cost. Say if you add up all this stuff and it costs, you know, are you guys still there?
Yep.
Okay. Say it costs like $1,200 a month for everything. For four people, so that's $300 a month. Say everybody puts in $350, so you have that little buffer of $150 a month that goes into the kitty for the unexpected expense. So, you know, I don't know. I sure do look forward to the day that happens, though.
Me too.
I was complaining the other day. I'm so tired of paying by the Hobbs meter already. Already.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, I try and think through so many things that I can do on the ground before I turn that engine to where I'm ready to go, talk to the tower, get down to the taxiway and take off as soon as possible. So I'm not wasting time, you know, idling, you know.
That's the hard part about the Hobbs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, the other thing, too, is I always worry as a renter about, oh, am I going to get the plane back on time for whoever's after me?
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly like, yeah, you know, I'm not necessarily rushed, but I feel pressured to be able to, you know, go do what I wanted to do, more than likely get a $100 hamburger and then somehow make it back in enough time. So it's very hard to be able to schedule like long enough times for me to do what I really want to do with the plane. So that's my biggest problem with the renting.
Yeah. Do you use an online scheduler, John?
We do have an online scheduler.
What do you guys use?
I don't know. Something that I have no idea. I don't think it's anything in particular.
We use, let's see, Flight Schedule Pro. And if you go to www.flightschedulepro.com, then I can sign in, and it takes me to, you know, the airplane that I rent and a calendar and whatnot, and you can see what times everybody's renting it. And like, for example, for what you were saying, it won't let me rent something. So if someone's got the plane from, let's say, 7 to 9 a.m., I can't say that I want it from 9 to 11. The earliest it's going to let me take it is 10. So it puts a little buffer in there for you, which is kind of nice. But I made a mistake the other day. I decided I wanted to fly somewhere, and I guess I'll get into this a little bit. I decided I wanted to fly somewhere, and I texted a buddy. I'm like, hey, I know it's last minute. It was like 10 o'clock at night, but do you want to go fly tomorrow? we'll run over to Glendale for do breakfast, because they were having kind of a scheduled fly-in over at Glendale Airport, because they acquired a restaurant. And I'll talk about that here in a minute. And he's like, sure. So I'm like, so then I went online, and I'd went online earlier that day, and no one had the plane. So I went online. Sure enough, someone has the plane, but they have it at 9 a.m. So I'm like, well, we're not going to have it for too long. So I'll just schedule it from 7 to 9. So I went in and clicked, you know, and set it up 7 to 9, and away we went. Anyways, we come back and park the plane, and it's like, I don't know, I'm walking back in the FBO over there at Qatar at like, I don't know, 9:15 at the very latest, 9:10, 9:15, something like that. And Jackie, my flight instructor, which is who I give my check to for the plane, she's like, hey, I didn't see you on the schedule. I'm like, yeah, I put it in last night, as a matter of fact. She goes, no, I see you on for next week two times. I see you on from 7 to 9 and then 9 to 11. I'm like, oh, crap.
Oops.
So I clicked the wrong week and put myself in for the following Sunday. And then she asked, she goes, well, it was not that really big a deal. But she's like, well, can you go back in and put yourself in so at least it shows that it was taken by you? And it wouldn't let me do it. And that's where I found out that it makes you put in a buffer. It wouldn't let me do it without her authorization. So I emailed her and say, hey, I tried. It won't let me. But, you know, you should be able to do it for me. So it did. So she went in there and put it in there. But, yeah, I kind of fat-fingered the mouse or whatever and clicked on the wrong date by accident. But yeah, Flight Schedule Pro, it looks like, you know, it's set up for anybody who wants to schedule a plane. I don't know if it costs the plane owners like a monthly fee or something. Yeah, matter of fact, I'm sure it does, because at the top it says free 30-day trial. So I'm sure they pay some sort of monthly fee to use it. But simple to use. How about you guys? You guys use anything for the club?
We use aircraftclubs.com.
Okay.
And it's very basic. I'm sure it hasn't been upgraded in a while, but it gets the job done. Everybody understands it. It works.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't enforce any kind of a gap. I don't know if they have an option to do that. I'm kind of glad they don't, because if I'm just doing pattern work, I don't really need an hour cushion.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing is when I schedule, if I'm scheduling something, I will tend to schedule long.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll schedule 3 hours even if I think I'm going to be back in two. And then I don't have the pressure of wanting to get back right away.
Yeah, that's what I try to do.
Mm-hmm. Never works out.
For some reason, it don't.
I always end up coming back like 15 minutes later than when I scheduled it for. And I'm like, I had like an hour buffer in there. What the hell?
Yeah, no, that also happens to me. So now my buffer is like multiple hours. And then it comes back and it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the other problem too is like, you know, I could take the plane for multiple hours, but it's the only ones. There's only one 172 now, and everybody uses it for flight training. So then I'm like, well, you know, if I take it for like 3 hours, then everybody who, you know, flies on the weekend isn't going to be able, you know, and then I feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
first come, first serve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just having, you know, tried to get the certificate and trying to work the schedule so that I could fly as much as I could to get my training in. Then I, you know, feel bad for the other students that are trying to do that too. So.
Yeah, this one here, when you go in and put stuff in, you're supposed to put down if you're going VFR, IFR, and then like where you're going. You don't have to put a whole flight plan, but like I said, I was just going over to Glendale for breakfast and back. So I just put, you know, DVT, GEU, back to DVD, you know, breakfast, whatever. And then it even tells you, oh, you haven't rented this plane, blah, 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 long enough, or it's been too long since the last time you rented it, but it lets you go ahead and override it anyways. But I think that's – I think she just hasn't put in some information in there on me, because I've been flying at least – just about at least once every 30 days at least. So
yeah,
I've been staying as current as I can, I guess.
Yeah.
So
good for you.
Bully for you.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
So I got the number for the tower the other day.
Uh-oh.
Ooh. What'd you do?
Oh, let me guess. Let me guess. Did you hit Delta before you were cleared?
No, actually, no? I called them up and asked for the number.
Oh, you're no fun.
I know. I just had to put it that way.
Oh, yeah, suspense. You know, that's it. I'm done. I'm editing that whole bit out.
No, you got to leave it in, because I needed to talk to the tower, because I had a bit of an issue. So I was flying up to Brainerd, Minnesota, which is about an hour or so away by aircraft, by Archer. And so I set up when I called ground in the for my first initial contact of the morning. I said, you know, hey, I'd like flight following up to Bravo Romeo Delta. And they said, sure. And I had already filed a VFR flight plan, because this was just a day VFR trip. And when I got – so they gave me my squawk code, and they gave me my departure frequency and all that kind of good stuff. So I get all that set up in transponder, and so you understand, I'm in a Class Delta airport, towered airport, that's underneath a Class Bravo shelf. And so my takeoff sequence is going to be, I'll take off into the Delta airspace, of course, and then they'll tell me to contact Minneapolis departure. And then they'll get on with me, and I'll say I'm here, and they'll say radar contact, and they'll start giving me traffic advisories. Mm-hmm. All of this is well and good and normal and everything, but it doesn't give me any time to activate my VFR flight plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I use a little known feature that everybody should know for VFR. Every VFR pilot should know if you're flying out of a towered field, which is you can ask the tower to activate your VFR flight plan for you. So when
you're talking about your Class Delta airport?
Yeah, a towered airport. At a towered airport, you can ask at any towered airport.
Okay.
You can at the pilot's request, the tower will forward your departure time to the flight service station to activate your flight plan. And for any and all CFIs that are out there listening or wanting the reference, it's AIM514F Foxtrot. And that has that text in it. And apparently nobody knows this, because every pilot I've talked to about it says, really? I didn't think they would do that.
I wonder how many air traffic controllers know it enough to agree to do it for you.
Not this one.
Yeah. Okay.
So he kind of knew it. So I got my takeoff clearance. I finished my run up, and I got the avionics all set up, and I had everything ready to go. And I've got my whole sequence of what I'm going to be doing, and I've got the radios are all set up to, you know, I've got tower on primary and departure on the flip flop frequency, and My squat code is in, and I'm all set and ready to go. And I say, okay, tower, I'm at 1-4 left, ready for departure. And they say, great, you're clear to take off 1-4 left. And I read back my clearance, and I say, and could you please activate my VFR flight plan? And the guy says, well, when you flip over to departure, your flight plan will be activated for you automatically.
Hmm?
And I was like, that's not the way it's ever happened to me before. Usually they just say, sure, I will do that for you. And that's the end of it. And so I've never heard of this, but I figure, who am I? You know, I'll let it go.
Well, yeah. Where's the – how is anything going to get – you know, communicated that you've left unless the air traffic controller is willing to do it for you at this point.
Yeah, as far as I know, there is no connection between Minneapolis departure and Princeton Flight Service, which is the local flight service station that would be handling my flight plan. And I was a little bit confused and I'd like, that's unusual. It doesn't seem quite right to me. But because I'm going to be departing from a Delta directly into a Bravo and getting flight following in a fairly busy airspace, I don't want to jump off frequency to go call up flight service, Princeton Radio, and say, hey, would you activate my flight plan? Because the time that I'm going to be off of there, I'm not going to be I'm going to be in a class Bravo airspace and not communicating with air traffic control. And that's not what I want to be doing.
Right.
So I just Roger it back to him. And take off, and I get to Brainerd, and I go to close my flight plan, and they say, oh, it was never activated.
Mm.
Now, 20 miles outside of Brainerd, I'd lost
flight following.
Flight following. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they canceled my flight following. So if anything had happened to me in those last 20 miles or on landing, there would have been nobody that had any idea where I was or that I was not where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I got back, and I when I got onto the ground back at Crystal, I asked for the tower number, and the following day was a work day, and I called and asked for the tower supervisor, and he and I chatted, and I explained the situation, and he said, well, let me check the tapes, and let me call you right back. And he did, and he was very polite about it, and he said, yeah, I checked the tapes, and it happened just the way you said it did, and I apologize. I've talked to the controller in question, and he's a new controller. I think they do a lot of training at that tower.
Hmm.
It's one of the reliever airports for Minneapolis, and it's pretty sleepy. And so I think a lot of controllers start there. And he said, so I talked to the guy and I explained the situation to him, and that, you know, this isn't like IFR. It doesn't happen automatically. You have to actually pick up the phone and call flight service and activate.
Well, that's what it sounded like. He was thinking it was an IFR flight plan or something, but obviously he wasn't giving you IFR clearance to leave and all that. But
right,
he kind of it alluded to the fact that it happened the same way, didn't he?
Yeah, So I learned a little something, and he learned a little something, and I shared this story with a few other folks that were around the flying club, and they learned a little something because none of them knew that that was even a procedure that you could ask for, or a service that you could ask for from Tower.
Now, I haven't looked up the rec on that, but is this just a special situation type of thing where you're not going to have enough time to do it because of the overlaying Bravo airspace? So that's what it's used for?
No, you can use it at any time, and in fact, I'll pull up the chapter and verse. I would, but it's going to take me too long. Anyway, it just the reg says that on pilot's request, the departure time will be forwarded to the flight service station.
I've got my book right here, actually. Let me grab it.
And the procedure says you should avoid this procedure at busy airports. Yeah, and like I said, it's a pretty sleepy little reliever airport.
Okay.
That doesn't do a tremendous amount of traffic.
Oh, okay. You said it was AIM?
Yep, 514 Foxtrot.
514, okay.
I'll beat you to it anyway.
Oh, it's like, anyways, carry on while I'm looking this up. Foxtrot. Okay. On pilot's request, at a location having an active tower, the aircraft identification will be forwarded by the tower to the FSS for reporting the actual departure time. This procedure should be avoided at busy airports, like you said.
Yeah, so you may be out of luck.
Yeah, at the busiest general aviation airport in the country, I guess. Maybe that's why I've never even been told to even consider that. But you know, it's not ridiculous all the time. But there are times when you're trying to come into land and you're like, oh, I've got time. I'm 10 miles out. And, you know, you got someone up there going, Diwali Tower, Acha 525 Charlie, Inbound Land with Oscar. And then you've got the tower going, dude, you're not even anywhere near Death Valley. What's going on? And so then they have a conversation for 5 minutes, and you're like, oh my God, I'm 6 miles out. Now I got to start U-turning or S-turning or whatever.
Hey, at least you're outside of the airspace at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
I had it happen, and I was on a, you know, we were doing pattern work at a uncontrolled airfield that's inside the Delta. Like, I don't know, 2 miles from, you know, the airport. So, because it's a really tiny, it's like an 1800 foot strip or something like that. It may even be shorter than that. It's tiny, but we were doing some pattern work there, and then we get out and, you know, I start heading back to the airport, and I couldn't get to the controller to tell him that, hey, I'm outside of the traffic pattern trying to come over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was, I didn't know. I mean, I had an instructor on the plane with me at least at that point, but I was like sitting there like, I'm not going to be able to talk to this guy for like 2 minutes, and I'm going to be over the airport in like a minute and a half. So what do I do here?
Mm-hmm.
Don't go there.
Yeah.
But well, it was still inside his airspace regardless. Like,
oh, okay. Well,
cause we're already, I mean, you're in the airspace when you're landing at that other airport.
Oh,
so it's not like, you know, I need to do circles before I enter Delta. I'm like in Delta.
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, we, so let's see, it was, on the 8th, January 8th, that was that Sunday, we, flew over to, Glendale for breakfast. Now, Glendale is 15 miles exactly in a straight line from Deer Valley. So it was an incredibly, boring and tedious flight, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Did you even lean it out?
No, not so much.
Did you get the landing light turned off?
I barely got the fuel pump turned off just to turn it back on. Yeah, so, well, you know, there's this cool website, and if you haven't seen it, it's called meetup.com, M-E-E-T-U-P.com, meetup.com. Mm-hmm. And it's where just groups of people have come together, and so if you go look up, if you go to meetup.com and sign up and say, hey, I'm interested in aviation and flying, blah, 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 well, maybe there's a meetup group in your area, because there's a pretty good size one in my area of, you know, about 40 different pilots locally in the area are on this thing pretty consistently. So like several times a month, maybe like 5 or 6 times a month, there's a meetup somewhere. And so January 8th, Sunday, there was a meetup over at Glendale Airport for the new restaurant, which is called Left Seat. Well, now it's called the Left Seat West. Left Seat Restaurant used to be located at actually Phoenix Sky Harbor, but they kind of bullied them out with you know, messing with their lease or whatnot. So they said, okay, fine, we'll just leave. So they left and took up new residency at Glendale Airport. So it's nice to have another, you know, close place to fly into for breakfast, but that's ridiculously close. But I said, what the heck, let's go fly anyways. Talk about actually trying to meet the $100 hamburger, because you can just do it if the airport's only 15 miles away. Back to that bloody Hobbs meter, okay? So literally, I timed it 12 minutes from the time I pushed the throttle to the firewall to the time my wheels touched down at Glendale. 12 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah. So we get over there, have some breakfast. Oh my gosh, it's 8:45. We're supposed to be back at 9. All right, get in the airplane. We get down to the edge of the runway, and there's some guy that's lost, saying that he's inbound to land, and the controller's like, man, I see you. Turn left right now. Turn left. You know, he's telling him because there's another plane out there in the pattern that actually is coming in, and this guy's like, heading away from Glendale. And anyways, there was this big, long discussion. I'm sitting there burning gas at the end of the runway, ready to take off, but I can't get a word in edgewise. So he finally gets this guy on about a 6 mile straight in final. And actually, I think he was probably closer to Goodyear's airspace than Glendale's. We finally took back off and got back over to Deer Valley. But a few minutes late on my arrival back when I was supposed to have it. But we got back safe and sound. And it was this guy's wasn't his first time in a small plane, but it's been his first time in a long time. I guess he's flown a few other times with some other people. It's a friend of my wife that she works with. It's her husband. So he's always saying, "Hey, if you need some extra ballast in your plane, just let me know." I'm like, you don't understand. Lugging your 230-pound, 6'4" ass around is not helping me. I haven't flown by myself yet since having my ticket, and I don't know that I ever will. I just prefer to fly with somebody else with me. It's more fun.
I haven't yet.
Just more fun. I always like to enjoy the scenery and talk about it with other people and give them a chance at the controls and whatnot. So, you know. So other than that, the next Sunday after that, actually, what was that? Last Sunday, the 15th. Yeah. I took a couple of friends of mine that I used to work with at IBM, and we flew up to Payson for breakfast. And Payson's just like the perfect place to fly from Deer Valley. It's exactly 50 nautical miles. It's 50 nautical miles exactly to the point you can't use it for a cross country. And they used to until they changed it to saying over 50 miles. So if it said 50.1, we would have been okay. But if you put it on a flight plan, it's exactly 50. So can't use it anymore. But you know how I was mentioning the weather, how perfect it's been? So we get up Sunday morning, look outside. It's overcast as far as the eye can see, just gray. I'm like going, are you kidding me? I've just been begging to go fly, and this is what I'm looking at. They said that the overcast layer was at 8,500. We got going, and I was level at 8,500, and it was at least 1,000 feet above me. So they were off a little bit. Just the smoothest, most glassy air I've flown in ever, maybe. I mean, I didn't even get any bumps going over the mountains, which is, odd. You at least get some mechanical turbulence, you know, going over the mountains, a little mountain wave or whatever, but nothing. It was just perfect.
Awesome. I'm jelly. Very jelly.
So, back to that Deer Valley to Glendale. I've got 1 hour in my 1 hour on the Hobbs time exactly. I had to pay an hour for two 12-minute flights.
Oh, that hurts.
I got to figure out how to disconnect that thing. I swear to God. All right.
Get yourself a Cub.
I know, right?
Build a Sonex. Yeah. Like four or 5 gallons an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The flight up there to Payson was an hour and a half on the Hobbs meter. So that was only a half an hour more, but 100 total miles versus the 24 miles. So go figure.
Yeah.
But that was a nice flight. Each one of them took a turn up front, they both got a chance on the controls and stuff. One of the guys, Matt, he actually used to be an avionics installer. He used to install like the same autopilot, the STEC 55 or the STEC 50 that I have that we have inside the Archer. So that was pretty cool. And the other guy, Mike, he's never been in a small plane, so it was his first time. So they all had a good time. I had a great time. Looking forward to something next month, maybe trying to go up with a couple of guys from my work, thinking about maybe trying Sedona for the first time. So that should be pretty cool.
Get yourself a Very Easy. That's what you need.
Ooh. Yeah.
My neighbor built one of those in his garage when I was a kid. You get,
I can't imagine building one of them.
100 horsepower engine that'll turn 169 knots.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
John knows how I am about those canards. One of my all-time favorite planes is a Velocity.
There you go.
Oh man, you stared at that thing for so long.
I just think they're the coolest, man. They just, I mean, for again, like you put like 150 horsepower engine in it, and you're doing 200 knots in those things. It's just crazy. They are so efficient. They have a glide ratio that's ridiculous, I guess. So very fuel efficient, very slippery. No idea what they feel like on the controls, but they have that little. Well, I've seen them set up a couple of different ways with the stick between your legs or whatever, but a lot of them are like F-16 style. You know, there's an armrest and a stick in your hand, a joystick in your hand. So
there's some good video on YouTube of a kid from here that actually flew one of those from Brainerd to Pretoria, South Africa.
Whoa. That is a trip.
Yeah, it was a heck of a trip.
And a lot of those have like a range of like around 1,000 nautical miles, 1,100 nautical miles on usable fuel.
Well, a very easy can go 1,600.
See, look at that.
On 24 gallons.
That's fuel efficiency.
Oh, man, if it wasn't a pain to build.
Oh, you just have to like sanding it for about 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get good with your glass work by then.
My neighbor's, when it got close to the end, he put 20 some coats of paint on it. Very, very thinned out paint. Wow. But flies couldn't land on it. It was the funniest thing. The flies would be buzzing around in the garage, and they would come in to land on the wing of this plane, and they would skitter off.
That's some slippery paint there, man. Nice job with the polish.
Yep. That was pretty fun. So there's inexpensive flying. I'm sure you can pick one up used for not too much.
They are not expensive at all used. And they, you know, they race those things too.
They do, yeah. And they are fast. And they go a very, very, very long way.
What's the other version of the Varies?
There's a Long Easy. There's long a Very Biggin. Yeah.
There's a Cozy.
Yeah, the Cozy.
There's a couple Cozy ones.
Yeah.
There's the 3 and the 4.
See, here's one on barnstormers.com. It's got an O235 in it. 370 total time on it, you know, for 24 grand.
Mm-hmm.
It says it flies 165 knots at 5 gallons an hour at flight level 230. It has oxygen on board.
It better.
I guess. Better. It should have a turbo if we're doing that nonsense.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, because the service ceiling on that engine is a lot lower than that.
Yeah, it's going to be 14,100, I'd assume, like most other gas engines. But yeah, here's another one, like for 32 grand. This thing, it says, this one says 5-time winner at Air Venture Cup Sprint Class, plus winner of many air racing events, plus winner of Fuel Venture Meadow Lake at 66 miles per gallon. And it's a stock Very Easy record holder at 222 miles per hour. So here's – oh, yeah, and it has a whole bunch of trophies around and everything. I've seen this one for sale for quite some time. Not sure why it hasn't sold yet. But 32 grand and you get yourself a little racer.
Yeah, nice tandem racer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you been in any tandem planes like the Cubs and whatnots and the – and Citabrios or anything like that?
I have not yet. I haven't flown.
I haven't.
A tandem or a tailwheel for that matter.
Mm. I want you so bad.
I got plenty of time in the tailwheel, but nothing in the tandem. I feel like you kind of lose a little bit of the sharing of the experience when you're in that tandem formation, because of course you are on the mic together, but I don't know.
You can't see each other.
Yeah. Well, one person can see it. The person from the back can see you, at least the back of your head. But
the back of your head, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm cool with it. I just found a C-47 for 100,000 pounds.
Is that the max gross weight, or is that the cost?
Yeah.
That's the cost.
So 100,000 pounds American is about what?
Like 200?
No, it's not one for not one, anymore. But I think it'd be about 160,000 still.
Dry stored for 25 years. But my computer's being too slow, so.
It might be out of annual.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, so tell me if you've ever had this done. So I went back home to Missouri for Christmas, as I try to do every year, but haven't made it all the time. I've only actually missed like 3 or 4 times in the 22 years I've been in Phoenix. But anyways, I fly back into MCI, that's Kansas City International Airport. And, you know, usually fly Southwest or U.S. Airways because they're the two that do direct flights several times a day. So anyways, flying U.S. Airways, and I've never had this happen. We actually enter a pattern at, you know, do the downwind, the base, and turn to final. Now,
visual approach is in use?
Yeah. Well, it was – and it maybe – I don't know if it was – because normally – airliners, you're on a straight in approach for like 10 or 15 miles.
Right.
All right. We are turning, and this is now, keep in mind, this is 11:40 p.m. when we land. So I think that probably has something to do with it. But we enter, and I'm like going, and I'm on the window. I'm like, wait a minute, there's the airport. We're downwind. And I go, we're going to be turning base any minute now. And sure enough, we did. And then land, I'm like, I've never been in an airliner at traffic pattern altitude, whatever that may be there, you know.
It's doing, higher for heavier stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Doing the pattern. I just thought it was odd, you know, because you're always just, you know, forever. You're just descending in a straight line and not turning much. So you guys ever experienced that?
You know, I got to experience a hold on the 31st, we flew back from a vacation on December 31st, and the pilot came on and he said, they're putting us in a hold. Like, you got to be kidding me.
That stinks.
That's expensive.
So now you're just loitering up above doing circles with other jets for a while.
And I'm like, I'm sitting there going, I know how to do this.
That's right. That's in your training, right in your training area.
Yeah, like I know he's doing standard rate turns right now. Look at this. We're going to turn for 30 seconds. I'm sorry. We're going to turn for a minute. Yeah, we're going to turn for a minute. And I couldn't get the GPS to fire up on my on 4Flight.
Oh.
Otherwise, I would have figured out which. Yeah, I would have figured out which airway we were on and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coming back to Phoenix. From Colorado during vacation last year, I had my charts with me. And so based on landmarks outside and stuff, I was trying to figure out where we were as we were heading back into Phoenix. So that was kind of interesting.
The best is when you can get the internet, like through GoGo or something, fire up a FlightAware for your flight.
Yeah.
I was doing that one time. And
of course, that's what, like 10, 15 minutes behind?
Yeah, it's 15.
Yeah, it's somewhat behind, but sometimes it's only like 5, I thought.
I don't know.
But anywho, it was kind of cool because you could see, because we were going around a lot of weather.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I could see, you know, through the radar on the FlightAware, I was like, hey, we're probably about here now. The weather's right here, and my stepmom next to us is like freaking out because of the thunderstorms around us. And I was like, it's cool. We're going around it. See?
Mm-hmm.
It was a blast.
Yeah, I remember on that same flight when we were coming back to Phoenix from the Colorado area, and we were on Frontier, or I don't remember who. One of the few that still allow you to plug in a headset and listen to ATC as you're going along. And they kept jockeying us around 10 or 15 degrees here or there to get around the systems that were in front of us.
Yeah.
Speaking of tailwheel, the little Cessna 140 8-1 Lima that I fly in with my buddy, I have several videos up on YouTube with me and him in it. And someone posted on YouTube, hey, my dad owned this exact plane, owned this very plane. I'm like going, no way.
That's so cool.
When did he own it? And he said, oh, he owned it from here to here. So I relayed that information back to Dean. I go, you ain't going to believe this, but the previous owner's son just, you know, saw some videos of ours and, you know, said he owned it. And I said, here's his name. He goes, yep, sure. He goes, sure enough, that's the guy who owned it. He goes, see if you can get me his contact information. I'll send him some pictures and whatnot. So we exchanged information. I got it over to Dean. And so just how cool is that, you know, because that plane wasn't from here at all. It was from another state at some point. So pretty interesting.
That's cool.
The internet wins again.
It is amazing.
Internet? What's internet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't get to see that much anymore, especially air, because of work, huh?
I've been Twitter dark for so long. I'm sorry.
Speaking of that,
I can't keep up with it.
Speaking of the YouTube videos and the little Cessna 140, did you guys ever see the video of me and Dean doing the little what I call the CG test?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, you'll like it. I'll have to send it to you.
Show notes.
Show notes.
I'm pretty sure that you don't work. You just fly and do YouTube.
I wish. I wish.
That's what it's seeming like.
Well,
every time I see you on Twitter, you're posting some new YouTube video, and I'm like,
"This is true." Yeah, the velocity of the YouTube videos when you're telling us how great the weather is down there.
Yeah. Well, I was contacted by YouTube saying that I am allowed to monetize my videos now, so we've got advertising.
Well, get on that, because we got some hosting coming up here soon.
If anyone ever decides to actually let the whole commercial go for 30 seconds and I get paid my half cent or whatever they give me, I have no idea.
Yeah, but, where does all the money for the In the Pattern podcast tip jar go to, John?
What tip jar?
I helped John last year with the hosting costs or whatnot, but yeah. He's been taking care of it otherwise. But anyway, so we're in the little Cessna 140, and the thing trims out so nicely that, you know, once you have it trimmed out, you just sit back and wait till you get somewhere near your destination before you have to actually touch it again. So, but what's funny about it is that you can totally fly the plane without touching the yoke just by moving your body around a little bit. So I'll send you the video, and I'm like, all right, Dean, take us, you know, put your hands out over the dash. So he adjusts his seat belt and he leans forward a little bit and reaches his hands over top of the dash. And sure enough, we start descending at about 50 foot a minute. And I'm like, okay, we need to pull up. So we both lean back and the thing starts pitching up, you know, and we get back to altitude. And we're like, all right, time to take a right. So we both lean to the right and it starts turning to the right. Then we lean back to the left to straighten it back up. All without touching the yoke whatsoever, or actually, I think on the, I hit a rudder pedal once a little bit, but it's pretty fun. I'll send you the video.
That sounds nice.
Stick your hand out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've y'all in there.
I know. Have you seen those videos where like some of the controls are messed up, so they're like trying to open the doors on a Cessna 172 to adjust their pitch and.
If you watch Flying Wild Alaska, there was an episode recently where what's her name, Ariel Tweedo or whatever, was doing her.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. John,
she's doing her thing, out. And yeah, he was like, "I'm going to make this hard for you," and just sticks his hand out the window.
He didn't want to lose his double or nothing, you know.
Yeah,
it's $5.
If he was really trying to make it hard, he would have waited until she was in the flare.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be moving it in, out, in, out.
Yeah, she don't need any extra anything to distract her at this point. I think tonight – do you know, John, if tonight's the last episode of the season?
I don't know. I'm definitely a week behind right now.
Okay.
I'm a week out, but I've been catching some stuff on the Twitter feed as we're talking, because it's going – it just ended 15 minutes ago. And do you want me to spoil it?
No.
All right. Then I won't spoil it.
It's recorded.
It's you can, the one you can show
go,
that
go look
Lindsay
up the NTSB
together.
Incident report.
No, no, we don't want to do that.
Just kidding. Just kidding, Ariel. If you're listening, that's yeah.
Let's leave her with the dog sleds and keep her out of the airplanes. Sorry, Ariel.
Oh, she is a listener.
Yeah, so. I'm sure. No offense, but you know, John Ponce, he gets all the credit, man, for keeping them both alive.
I don't know, man. I
You think it's an act?
I could see her side from being well, somewhat, but like I you know, I had my fair share of crappy flight lessons where I almost killed us, so.
Well, first, and she starts off in what was it, a Cessna 206?
Well, see, that's where I got to cut her some slack. She started out in a 207 flying in freaking Alaska.
Yeah.
Okay. You put any of us in Alaska, I guarantee you we're not going to do that well.
Yeah.
Put any of us in a 207.
Yeah.
Even so. It's
kind of a big airplane to start your learning off on.
Yeah.
It's just an extra ton.
Well, and you've got the prop.
Right. You've got that extra – you've got the blue knob to deal with.
Yeah.
And so, I couldn't imagine trying to learn that. I can't even imagine trying to do that now. But, like, while learning pre-solo, no way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that couple hours before the solo was the hardest, you know, part of the training, because you're just getting bombarded with trying to figure out how to land, and you're just doing the same thing every lesson. And you're just getting frustrated, and it's not working, and then you're just waiting for it to click. Thankfully, eventually it does, and then all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, that was cool. but you know, the couple hours before that, oh, it's awful.
And then you go do crosswinds.
Well, I did my fair share of crosswinds before that. I don't know, right when I started learning to land, I learned the crosswinds kind of right away.
Did you?
Those haven't been a huge issue for me. I don't know why. It just wasn't.
I've got them figured out now, but boy, they were tough at the time.
Yeah.
I haven't had all that many to really deal with, but what I do find myself doing all the time now is slipping to land just for fun. I don't know. Maybe that'll help me for practice later, but
just watch your airspeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and remember, you can't do that with full flaps.
You don't want to be cross-controlled and slow.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, I've done my fair share of landings at 17, 20 knots of wind, you know.
Yeah, and
that, across the runway.
And that is such a light breeze there, what they do in Alaska, right?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous what they're like, oh, this might be scary. Are you kidding me? He just said 38 knots sideways for you. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Anyhow.
What else you got, Brad?
Anybody else not terribly familiar with Unicom radio procedures?
I'll
take that as a yes.
You're talking about just like uncontrolled.
You're not talking CTAF, right?
Not talking CTAF. I'm talking.
Okay, Unicom. That's where I wanted to clarify.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I know how to order fuel.
I'm not talking about the Unicom that you get when you're coming into your controlled field. I'm talking to buy gas or whatever. I'm talking about the if you're going to an airport that has the Unicom is the CTAF. The CTAF is a Unicom frequency.
Right.
So you can ask for
a pizza.
Yes, but you can also ask for winds and the currently active runway.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they give it to you.
Yeah, Payson's like that, where I just went to.
I have yet to get anybody on the Unicom to actually answer when I ask for.
No, Freeway Airport in Bowie, Maryland, they will come right away. We do radio checks before we started flying with the Unicom, and then coming in, we'd get the weather as soon as we were a couple miles out before we switched, you know, before we started announcing our position and everything. And where else was it? Millville, New Jersey. As soon as you start talking on the CTAF, there is somebody that comes on, and they're like, they almost think they're like a control tower, I think. Because they come on, they tell you the weather, and then they tell you what runway they're using, and then they're like trying to like – my friend went there too, and he said they were kind of trying to sequence him in. And he's like, dude.
Are you kidding?
It's a CTAF. He's yeah, like, yeah, there's another guy in the pattern. He's coming around, so you should do this. And he's like, dude.
No.
Thanks. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a CTAF, right? And then there's a UNICOM.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a flight service station.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a multicom. And all of them have slightly different radio procedures.
Yeah, they're at Payson in the AFD communication. Says CTAF/UNICOM, and it gives you the same frequency. Of course, they also have their own AWAS there, so there is automated weather. And then I know when I landed and pulled up to park, a guy jumped on the radio and asked me if I was going to need any fuel or not. So what's the major differences between that CTAF and UNICOM?
They're not major. I mean, these are really nitpicky things. You still do pretty much everything just like you would with a CTAF.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say the airport, you say the frequency first. So, you know, the quoting out of this AC90-42 Foxtrot, you would say Frederick UNICOM, Cessna 801 Tango Foxtrot, 10 miles southeast, descending through 3,500, landing Frederick. Request wind and runway information, Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
Is this an AOPA thing?
No, this is a
you're reading
federal,
out of?
This is an AC, an advisory circular.
Ah, interesting. You're using Frederick. Cool.
Yeah.
They're getting a control tower.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you won't next be able months. To use this anymore. Yep.
So much for you being the example.
Yeah, and then for flight service, you can the magic phrase, you don't say request wind and runway information. You say request airport advisory.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we used that at the UNICOM at Freeway. We just said airport advisory.
Uh-huh. See? Got to read your ACs, man.
Yeah. I always
no, that's what the instructors and the flight school told us. And they're the ones that are manning the radio.
They should read the AC.
Yeah, wow.
AC's not binding anyway.
Well, I'd also recommend I bought that Say Again book, the ASA book.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Great book on radio communication.
Chris Finley gave that to me.
Yeah, it's great. That was a great read, and it made me a lot more comfortable with radio calls. Especially like flight following and stuff like that. It was like, oh, I can see exactly how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those will really help you out as you're trying to get used to what the magic phraseology is.
As much as I love the radio communication, I've mentioned it before that I enjoy it as much as I do the flying portion of it. The instrument portion of the training, I think, will scare the heck out of me because it is so much more to remember, write down, and repeat.
Just the clearance.
it's so much. That is so much.
Oh my gosh, it's a huge mouthful. You get such a stream, but I mean, fortunately, unless you're doing a pop-up clearance, you're on the ground,
right?
And you're calling for it. So mm-hmm. It's not like they just blurt out your call number and then blurt out your tail number and then just start reading at you. You get to set it up.
But then once you start getting into some sort of shooting approaches and stuff, all right, you're going for the missed approach, blah blah blah, and then you're going to climb to such and such, and do all of that is scripted ahead of time, right?
Yeah, the general purpose missed approach is scripted, but what they'll say is you'll say I'm going missed, and if you're in radar coverage, they'll say intentions,
mm-hmm.
and if you say I'm going to go to my alternate, then they'll immediately give you vectors to the alternate.
Mm-hmm.
So you better have locked into your brain what the mist is, and you should have the radios all set up to fly the mist. But they're probably going to give you radar vectors to your alternate, so you won't actually end up flying the mist.
Yeah.
But believe me, you will be so dialed in you will be hanging on every word they say when that happens. It'll be all right. And you can also, if you miss it, you just say again,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're like, even if you're doing a clearance, which is a long stream of stuff that they throw at you with, a transponder code and a frequency and a route and an altitude and all of this stuff. And if you miss part of it, just read back the part that you all of the parts that you got, and just when you get to the part where you missed, you know, usually it's going to be part of your route, and you'll just say, I got everything up to this. Mm-hmm. And then keep reading the rest of the clearance back.
Yeah.
So that when they come back to correct you, they just have to give you the little section that you said that you missed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get read back correct and you're on your way. But yeah. The thing I noticed the most is that it's just a different set of phrases when you're doing instrument work. It's not any – I don't think it's any harder than like flight – being in a flight following situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just another set of stock phrases that you have to learn, and then you get used to it, and it just works.
Yeah, and you have a certain method for writing down what they're telling you, like a certain order that it's always in.
Right.
Sequence.
It's always in the acronym is CRAFT. So you know when you're getting ready to take your clearance, you write down vertically. CRAFT, Charlie Romeo Alpha Foxtrot Tango.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be your clearance, which might be cleared as filed or, you know, cleared direct to wherever it is that you're going, whatever it is. Your route, which could be, again, as filed or it could be something else. Your initial altitude, which may include an expect, you know, mm-hmm. they may say 3,000 feet, expect 5,000 in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
A frequency. The frequency that you're going to contact once you clear the tower frequency, and then a transponder code. And it's always going to be in that exact order.
Right. Yeah. Get good at your shorthand.
Right. Exactly. Get good at your shorthand. And also
take notes quickly.
Get good at filing, because if you're good at filing, you'll file the plan that they're going to – you'll file the route that they're going to give you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you learn your airport and where they like to route you based on the winds, usually based on the winds at the time, you'll get that route pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm. It's those other airports that you visit and stuff that will get a little tricky for you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It will, but meh. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Hey, I love this YouTube video that you put in the show notes about the Gumps check.
Dude, what was up with that guy?
You know, I've seen a bunch of those where you can hear the gear horn the whole way down.
And you're like, and going, hello?
And you know the guy in the back doesn't know what that horn is. The guy in the back that's holding the camera.
Uh-huh.
I saw that.
He has no idea what that horn is.
Are you kidding me? I mean, I know that's coming through everybody's headset as well as the exterior speaker. And
there's a big flashing light on the panel.
Yeah. There's red lights on the panel, not green lights. And I don't know if you read, I don't know if you saw any of the other notes, but I think it was in French. But anyways, it was translated, and the guy was talking about, oh, I was concerned about the airplane in front of me. We saw as good as pretty much he did. There was no plane that ever was in front of this guy, as far as I could ever tell.
No, and he flew the steepest final I have ever seen. I don't know how he even got to the landing gear extension speed. And maybe that's why he didn't extend the gear.
He was pointed down big time.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out how he got the flaps in. Like, how did you get into the white arc? Because he was flying like a 5-degree approach or a 6-degree, you know, descent. Like, what are you – yeah.
Yeah, and he's in a fairly slippery plane and with gear, you know, retracted, you know, at that point. So, I mean, holy cow. That was scary. And then they sit in there with it still going on at a dead stop after they've power slid it over off the side of the runway a little bit. And they sit in there and they're sitting there like looking at each other and talking for a second. And then they're like, well, let's get out, you know. So he turns off the noise after, I know it seemed like another 10 or 15, 20 seconds instead of immediately, you know, turning everything off and jumping out of there. I mean, they sat in there and like wanted to have a conversation about it. He gets out and like touches the propeller. Is like, oh.
I know. You could tell that must have been like a really new prop because he fondled that propeller, that the remains of that propeller, which of course had the ends sheared off and curled up.
The whole plane looked pretty nice. Well, it was a nice, it was a Socata.
Yeah, he kept coming around and just touching it. Mm-hmm. Just he kept coming back to the prop. And you're going, oh.
I hope his insurance policy was paid up.
That last squeal that you heard was not actually the gear horn. That was the sound of his insurance deductible running out of his wallet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was ridiculous. Mm. I just pray that never, ever, ever happens to me once I get into a complex aircraft.
Yeah.
They always say, you know, there's people that either you have landed with wheels up or you're going to at some point. But I don't buy that. I'm not buying it. All right. So we should probably
should we hang it up?
Cut this thing, and we could leave some of this other stuff for next episode or whatnot. Is there anything in particular that you wanted to get out there real quick, Brad or John?
I miss flying.
Yes. We miss you flying, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I miss you flying. I miss you and Mark flying. I especially miss Mark flying just because I want him to get done.
Yeah.
You know, and he's right in the apex of the fun part, the solo cross country stuff.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And now he's got a camera. And you know how I am with the camera, so you know, I want to ride along on some of those, so
well, I'm hoping sometime in the next few months everything will be back together. I finally figured out what I owe left on my private pilot.
Yeah,
well, I've got
one credit card paid off, right? So
I got one of the credit cards paid off, and I got $5,000 left on the flight training out of the 11 that I spent. So
okay, all right.
And with a new job, you know, we'll see how it goes.
60% there.
Yeah. But then I'll be paying for a wedding and a house, and so, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Take the advice of every married man and elope.
Hello, Vegas. That's where we got married. It was fun, though. We had, I had 35, 40 of our relatives there. It was kind of like a mini vacation for everybody. Good times.
Nice.
So.
You're not that far away from it, though. It's like the country for us.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Everywhere's got cheap flights to Vegas, though, don't they?
You know, I think it's really cheap to fly up here, John, if you're looking for someplace to go.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Especially now, this time of year.
How long you been engaged, John? Or are you?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, shoot. In that case, what are we talking about? Oh. We got time.
She's like right there, isn't she? Yeah.
We got beeped.
Yes, I was on mute. But...
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Oh, boy. Yeah, show notes.
Yes. What else?
I actually might fly into Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport on Sunday. We'll see.
Weather willing.
Weather willing.
Weather permitting and planes willing.
And wallet willing.
Yeah.
Costs about $100 to land there just to pick somebody up.
Oh, really? Yeah. So is there a landing fee or a takeoff fee or both?
There is a fee to go to the one and only FBO on the field.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even just to
They charge a measly $7.88 a gallon for 100 low lead. And if you pay that, they'll waive the $35 ramp fee.
I would expect if you
buy a bunch of gallons, yeah.
Wow, do you know what I'd be expecting for seven something a gallon?
Not on the podcast.
I was going to say.
Hang on. Show here.
A wash and wax of the plane is what I'm talking about here, folks.
Yeah, oh, clearly. Wow, okay. Yeah.
Okay. That is just aviation rape.
So while it would be fun to hit the big runways at the little plane, I don't know if it'll happen.
Mm-hmm. But. Mm-hmm. Well, quickly, while we're on the topic of it, $100 user fee, kiss my bleep. Anyways.
Yeah, even though – so for those of our listeners who aren't as up on the politics of it,
I'm not.
It shouldn't really matter to us small guys.
We will initially be exempted, right? And if you listen to the plane crazy down under guys, that's what happened to them in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
They were initially exempted. GA was initially exempted from I shouldn't say GA, but piston singles were initially kept out of their user fee system as well. And
well, you should say non-commercial, right? So like, so
yeah.
Like, so like, for example,
non-scheduled. You mean
not even that?
No, yeah. Never mind.
But like guys over at Deer Valley at Westwind Aviation, they got caravans that they take people up to the Grand Canyon and back. They don't got to pay anything to take off and land at Deer Valley. Well, now they would.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think they describe it as recreational piston aircraft. There's a few exemptions, but even if we were exempted today, those bureaucracies, they have to feed themselves, and they're just going to grow.
It's never going to go away.
Yeah, you can't give them an inch.
We'll never get rid of it. And so it is worth becoming a single issue voter about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's shut it down like we did SOPA.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Obama knocked that out of the park, huh?
No, he didn't.
Oh, I thought he did.
The White House said they didn't like it, but the House and the Senate were still going to go through with it. But they finally announced today that they're at least shelving it for now.
Yeah.
They're going to reevaluate.
And I don't see user fees making any – I don't see them happening. But the best way to make sure that they don't happen and the best way to defer having this whole conversation again is to, you know, write your Congress critter and write the president and say, you know what, this is ridiculous and this is what actually happens and this is going to destroy general aviation. If I had to pay $100 every time I took off and landed or shot an ILS or if you listen to what the guys in Europe have to pay or what the guys in Canada have to pay or what the guys in Australia have to pay just in order to be able to fly, it's crazy.
Well, that would totally just end me being able to go fly. I make a decent living but add an extra $100 on top of what I already consider a way too expensive recreational thing to go do. And then that just shuts it down right there, and I've just basically wasted $7,000 on getting my ticket. So thank you very much. But, I hope it don't even make the part that they're trying to put through right now. I hope – you know, because like you said, that's just their foot in the door. That's just giving them that inch that they need to say, well, you know. Yeah, so anyways.
Yep.
Well,
just based on what everybody else has had happen to them, and other nations that have had happen to them, there's no way we can let this happen because it'll be the end.
Yeah, you know, you do this, and so maybe they pick up a few bucks there, but then that just hoses the whole general aviation economy across the board. As far as it's, how much tax money will they not make based on the amount of 100 low lead not sold anymore?
Right, so they'll have to raise the fee.
Right. And also airplane sales, you know, no one's going to be, you know, not near the amount of people is going to be going out there looking to buy airplanes if this is something that they got to look forward to all the time too.
Well,
so I think it would have
too,
more of a negative effect than a positive, no matter how they look at it.
Well, think about it too. You have all the other countries that have these user fees. What happens to the people who want to learn to fly there?
Well, they come here.
They come here.
Exactly.
Again,
when they no longer have an incentive to come here.
Yeah. They stop
pulling
coming.
All that money out.
Yeah. There's not an upside even for the government for this, so they just gotta, you know, be told how it's gonna work. And I don't know if they're not seeing all the different negative effects that it's gonna actually have or not, but I don't know how it could benefit them. I have no idea. So, anyways, let's leave on this positive note. Any shout-outs?
Red Tails is out today, I think.
Yes, Red Tails.
I have to get out to that one.
Yeah, I want to really try and see it this weekend myself, but I don't know if I'll make it or not.
I won't. I'll be editing a podcast.
Oh, is that right?
Which one?
Whose podcast? are you freelancing?
Oh.
That's wrong. I'm sorry.
Sooner or later, he's going to say I'm out of this business.
I'm sorry. Like, hey, John, can I still sleep in your tent at Oshkosh if I get to come this year?
we'll see.
There's a $100 user fee, right?
That'll just about pay for the week.
I know, right?
Well, I have to buy the extra week this year, so guarantee your spot.
Yeah. Brad and I were talking about Oshkosh a little bit before we got on. But anyways, yeah, Red Tails. Looking forward to that.
That's all I got. Oh, and my friend Tim got his license. I don't know if I, or certificate, his IFR. I don't know if I said that.
Ooh.
Last episode, but he got it, so congrats to him.
It's nice. Very nice. What's he planning on? Is he going to go commercial next or twin? Or
I think so. I think he's going twin. I haven't talked to him.
Is he going for a CFI and this is just his progression?
Cool. He wants to go professional.
Oh, so. Okay. Best of luck to him with that. That would be so tough. Any shout-outs for you, Brad?
Yeah, I got nothing on the shout-out side.
Nothing on the shout-out side. And I just want to give a shout-out to all the guys there on meetup.com. That place is awesome. Like I said, if you got to go check it out and see if there's a meetup group in your area. Get to know a lot of local pilots. And even if maybe, like for you, John, like if you can't afford to go fly yourself, you might be able to find someone to split it with or just go hang out and get a ride to a fly-in. They had a real cool one a few weeks before this, where they were flying to Payson for a full moon run. It was going to be the night of the full moon, so they were flying up to Payson for dinner, and so it was like be at Payson at 5:30 and then fly back to Phoenix with the full moon. So that was a pretty cool one. And then they do like during the cooler months anyways, the first Saturday of every month, they fly into Coolidge Airport for a pancake breakfast. So check it out, meetup.com.
Cool.
So, all right. Well, that's pretty much a wrap for episode 20. I'm glad we got to the big 2-0. We'll keep it rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to stay ahead of the stuck mic guys. That's good. That's just going to have to be it.
Yeah. That's a good podcast. I like that podcast a lot.
Aren't they on a 2-week thing?
Something like that, yeah. They're up to 17 or something.
All right.
No pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Chris, where can we find you on the internet?
All right, you can find me at Chris at inthepatternpodcast.com or Twitter, my transponder, or YouTube at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. And, of course, Google Plus as well. Chris Holub.
And Brad, where can we find you?
You can reach me at Brad at inthepatternpodcast.com, Twitter at Brad Kane, my transponder at Kane, and Google Plus at Brad Kane. And Kane is spelled just like it sounds, Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November.
All right, Mark, where can we find you?
You can find me at Mark at inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter as Student Pilot Mark. That's STDNT. Pilot Mark, on my transponder as Mark Lacoste, and on Google Plus as Mark Lacoste.
Cool. And you can find me at John at inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter as Pilot Conway. My transponder should be Pilot Conway as well, and also on Google Plus as John L. Conway IV, if you are adventurous. And you can reach all of us at inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter at inthepattern, and the My Transponder group page for In the Pattern. We also have a Facebook page for In the Pattern. Or you can search iTunes and search for In the Pattern Podcast. Go ahead and give us a review, rating, help us spread the word and get some other listeners, and it'll help anybody find us on iTunes. And finally, we also have a Google Voice number. That's 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
All right, guys. Till next time, keep the dirty side down.
Good landings.
Mm-hmm. Tailwinds.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic and you're cleared for the option.
Shows at the Aviation Podcast Network. thevoicesinyourhead.com.
Oh, are there notes?
No, I guess
there's a list.
Notes of what?
We decided, John, you are just interrupting me with all your typing. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I had it on mute.
All right. Let me try that again. So,